Tonight, the software industry suggests a new way to stop the shoplifting of games. Is it too much? Plus, who do you think owns the IP rights to the characters from Mortal Kombat? All that in your live calls and chat comments on the Bobby Blackwell Show, week of June 28th, 2009. Bobby Blackwell Show, you're on the air.
Calling in to chime in about this, Matt. And
it's your fault, Doc Wolf. It's you guys who buy these dumb Katamari, Catalarm kind of that game.
Bobby Blackwell back at Dragon Con 2005. I am here at Anime Weekend Atlanta 11. I'm here at the Best Buy in Alpharetta, Georgia, talking about the Xbox 360 launch.
DC Nate and everybody in chat's all going, we didn't buy into the hype. You did buy into the hype, you just didn't buy the system.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, it's Bobby Blackwell.
What up, G thinks he's going to be spoiling it and saying the answer is Warner Brothers, but he doesn't know where I'm going with it. Hello, everybody. Welcome to yet another edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us here on this lovely Sunday evening here on All Games Radio, I want to welcome you. Head on over to our chat room, chat.allgames.com. I'll be reading intelligent comments from chat throughout the night. A little bit later on, I'm going to be opening up our Skype line and our toll-free number. Our Skype line is Bobby Blackwell Show, all one word, and our toll-free number is 1-866-880-0156. Here in North America, we'll be opening up the phone lines probably in about 30 minutes or so. And my email for those on the podcast is blackwolf@allgames.com. And, you know, for people who listen Friday night, no, this show is not going anywhere. This show is still here on All Games, happily a part of the All Games Network over at allgames.com. So let's talk about the big news that I actually didn't tease. I had three big stories, and I decided not to tease the thing I was going to open up with. Id Software, they were always very proudly, very fiercely independent. You know, they're the ones that were behind Wolfenstein 3D, Commander Keen. What else did they? Oh, Doom. That's right. They did the Doom and Quake, and they were always fiercely independent. It's where John Carmack and John Romero got their start. A whole bunch of other people who, like American McGee, who have gone on and had illustrious careers, especially in like first-person shooters and PC gaming, they have come from Id Software. And it basically put Austin, Texas on the game map, game development map. It's because of Id Software. You know, California, there's a lot of game development studios out there. The Seattle area, because Nintendo and Microsoft are both up there, that's a big game development hotspot. And then Austin, Texas. That was like kind of the third one that people would think of. I'd like to start thinking of Atlanta, but that's just me and I'm biased. But Kotaku reports that they are no longer just little old Id Software. Two of the most acclaimed game development studios of all time, this is Kotaku talking now, are joining forces. ZeniMax Media, the parent company of Fallout 3 and Elder Scrolls development studio Bethesda Softworks, announced today that it is purchasing the legendary Doom and Wolfenstein studio Id. In an interview with Kotaku, Id co-founder John Carmack, Id CEO Todd Hollenshed, and ZeniMax CEO Robert Altman said that the purchase will change none of the principles of Id and Bethesda, but, let's see, none of the principles or principals. That was Good job, Kotaku. Of Id and Bethesda, but will allow Id to grow like it never has before. The purchase does not affect plans for previously announced games from Id that are slated to release through other publishers, including the Activision-backed Wolfenstein and the EA-partnered planned Rage. So, according to John Carmack, quote, "We're really getting kind of tired competing with our own publishers in terms of how our titles will be featured. And we've really gotten more IPs than we've been able to take advantage of. And working with other companies hasn't been working out as spectacularly as it could. So the idea of actually becoming a publisher and merging Bethesda and ZeniMax on there is ideal. It would be hard to imagine a more complementary relationship. They are AAA, top of the line in what they do in the RPGs, and they have no overlap with all of the things we do in the FPSs," unquote. Hollenshed said that the ZeniMax acquisition will allow Id to grow its internal team, staffing up the groups working on the next Doom, which will now be a ZeniMax game, and the Quake Live team for starters. So Id is basically going to handle all of their own IPs. And then, let's see. Altman from Bethesda said that it's a win for all fans of Id. He said the deal came about when Hollenshed approached him. ZeniMax had been looking to acquire developers and wanted Id, but didn't know it was available until approached. The merger had been in the works for months, according to the people on that call. So the vision for Robust Id from Altman in a press release says, quote, "We, along with many others, consider id Software to be among the finest game studios in the world, with extraordinary design, artistic, and technical capabilities. They have demonstrated repeatedly that rare ability to create franchise opportunities that are critical and commercial successes. Our intention is to make sure id Software will continue to do what they do best, make AAA games. Our role will be to provide publisher support through Bethesda Softworks and give id Software the resources it needs to grow and expand," unquote. So, no, you're not going to find, like, Fallout bobbleheads in Rage or anything like that. Now, to me, like, my opinion of id, which may not be kind of the popular opinion, is they make really great engines. And then the real mark of what id can do is what other companies do with id's engines. So I know that they're doing all these new IPs. I haven't really fallen in love with an id-developed game in a long time. So it would be interesting if id developed the engine technology that Bethesda would use with the games that they're making. I'm not saying that Bethesda makes terrible engines, but, you know, id and Bethesda both doing PC games that have extremely moddable engines. You know, everybody uses, like, the Oblivion construction set, and even Morrowind had a construction toolkit. And right now, Fallout has theirs. That's where I think that the collaboration will shine, is id making these technologically superior engines, pushing current PC technology to the limit, and then Bethesda actually using that to create fun games. I'm not saying that everybody thinks that id games aren't that fun. I haven't been enamored with them. So I'm looking in chat, chat.allgames.com. Everybody thinks I'm saying Cinemax. No, I'm saying Zenimax. Z-E-N-I-M-A-X. Hitstun says, "I've lost all track of what recent games id actually developed. I know they didn't do Quake 4 or the new Wolfenstein." The last one, like I said, the last one I can remember is, you know, I know they did Doom 3. And I can't think of any others. Pit Method says, "At least id wasn't bought out by EA or Activision." Woot. Dungeon Buster says, "Yeah, the high probability is that Zenimax," not Cinemax or Skinemax, "Zenimax will have license-free access to Carmack's tech." And I think that's what it is. I think that's kind of, that's what Bethesda sees out of this. Zenimax was a company developed by the people who founded Bethesda to branch out into other things without diluting the Bethesda name. So, like, they've got a studio that just does mobile games, and they've got a studio that did, like, action titles for consoles and bowling games for consoles and stuff. So it really is Bethesda that's doing this. It's the guys that started Bethesda that own the Z company. That sounds like it's a pay movie channel. So that's where I'm looking at it. You know, I haven't seen id make that many great games that were, you know, exceedingly fun to play for a long time. They've made great engines, and other people have taken those engines and created great games that other people want to play. So that, seeing that Bethesda will probably get license-free access to this technology that id is making, that excites me. Because I do like what Bethesda does, even if I haven't finished their games. I like what they've done. Hitstun says, "So Wolfenstein RPG 2 is a Bethesda game now?" No, what they're saying, as much as I'd love to make these jokes, id is going to be responsible for their IPs. Bethesda is not going to make a Wolfenstein RPG. You know, and id is not going to make a Fallout first-person shooter, because Bethesda already did that with Operation Anchorage. So they're going to be kind of on their own. It's kind of like the same parent company providing monetary resources and a publishing platform, because it's the future games that are going to be published. Right now, they're going to keep their current publishers. They're going to keep Activision and EA for the games that they already have deals with. But it's in the future. This allows id to have a little bit more control over the publishing, because now they're owned by a publisher. Sully907 then asked me, "What are some id engine games that were good recently? And I'd love to tell you, but it's they all moved over to Unreal Engine or Source." So the potential was there. Back when id was the only one on the market, there were a lot of great games made. You know, Heretic and Hexen were made on the original Doom engine. Those were great. I wouldn't mind seeing it rise back up to fame. I don't like seeing companies that like sputter and die and stuff. I want id to do well. So let's talk about purchasing games. This is a topic, and a lot of people are going to probably assume this is actually about piracy, and it's not about piracy. It is about theft. But I don't think this is going to do just really anything for piracy. This was a story done, or a study done by the Entertainment Merchants Association. So these are your GameStops and your Best Buys and your Walmarts. That's who these guys are. They're trying to protect themselves. There's the Entertainment Software Association that protects developers. There's the Entertainment Consumers Association that protects you. The Entertainment Merchants Association is looking out for the retailers. GameIndustry.biz reports that a study on behalf of the EMA in the U.S. has found that benefit denial technology could increase sales of a video game, DVD, and Blu-ray products as much as $6 billion U.S. dollars. Benefit denial is the concept of shipping products to a store in a disabled state and only activating them at the point of sale, cutting down on loss of theft. So, according to the quote here, Bo Anderson, president of the EMA, quote, "It is intuitive that if we can utilize emerging technology to reduce the shrink in the DVD, Blu-ray discs, and video game categories, and eliminate barriers erected to deter shoplifting, consumers will have easier access to the products, additional retail channels will carry these products, and costs will be eliminated from the supply chain. Until now, however, the lift in sales and reductions in costs have not been quantified and analyzed. Now we know that literally billions of dollars in increased sales and cost savings can be realized with benefit denial technology," unquote. So benefit denial. There is already something in the gaming industry that uses this term, benefit denial. If you're like me and you don't want to put your credit card on your Xbox 360, on your gamer tag, you go out and you buy points. You buy the points cards from a local retailer, or you'll buy your 12 months of Xbox Live on a card. Or if you play World of Warcraft and you don't want to give them your credit card, you buy the point card there. They scan those at the register, and you can actually read, if you read the fine print on the back of the card, it says, not valid until scanned at register. So if you take that card, put it in your pocket, and walk home, it's not going to work. Because it's not activated until you check out. So that's how they can sell those. So you already have the benefit denial. I never minded that. Now, I mean, I know that this is, you know, one of those, you know, you've got to be on the internet. It's still an activation thing. You have to be get on the internet and, quote unquote, activate your copy, and it's activated at the store. So it's another form of DRM. But this is not aimed at deterring piracy, because the EMA really doesn't care about BitTorrent. They do, but not for this. This is aimed at deterring little Johnny from walking into the GameStop while it's slammed and there's only one minimum wage person behind the counter, taking a game, picking it up, and walking out of the store with it and playing it at home. That's what this is made to deter. I personally have no problem with this. I'm sure somebody in chat room is going to give me a very good reason why I should have a problem with it. I just can't think of it right now. So that's why I wanted to bring it up for discussion. Is this something that you'd be okay with? Because we already do it for the points cards. Would you do this for software, too, that's not activated until you leave the register? Game Guru says someone will hack the activation, and I'm sure that's the case. But, I mean, if they're going to pirate it, this is not aimed to stop people pirating it. This is aimed to stop the 12-year-old who probably doesn't have a high-speed connection from stealing it out of the store. That type of theft still exists. They're actually stealing the physical product, the physical DVD, out of the store. This is not stopping. This would not be aimed at stopping people from going to the Pirate Bay and downloading it. Billy Ova says, "I hate you, Little Johnny." Little Johnny gets bashed on this show a lot. I bring him up a lot. Robocon says, "If they forget to scan the game, then that would suck." You know, it's one of those things, like, you know, especially at Best Buy, you buy it and it's in that case, and they can't forget to, you know, open that case. So it is a training thing, and yeah, that would suck if you bought it and it didn't scan. It doesn't activate because they didn't scan it. You know, in that case, you'd have to take your receipt, take it back, and they'll scan it there when you get there and prove to them that you just bought it from them. X-Link says, "What about people selling copies on eBay? This would not affect them." X-Link, and that this is one of the things, and I didn't even think of this until you asked that question. This would not affect people on eBay. because it's just activating that copy, not activating your ownership of the copy, but activating that copy. So I activate, I buy it, I activate the copy, I sell it on eBay, they have that code, that code's already active. I don't, unless they do work in some only like limited activation type of thing with this. But to me, this sounds like it's either on or off. That copy of the game is either on or off, and it's off until it's scanned at the register and purchased. Then it's on, and then no matter what happens to that game, it's always on. In my perfect world, that's the way it would work. So yes, I could give the game to you if I was done with it, and you would put in that same key that's already been activated at the register and say, yes, this was a purchased game. This was a legit game. Here you go. Gameru says, basically, can I buy an actual DVD and they activate the DVD? I don't get how it's supposed to work with physical media. You would have to probably input a code, maybe. I mean, it would be kind of like one of those input the serial code. I don't see how this would work with DVD and Blu-ray unless they had some technology where, kind of like, I don't know if you guys remember a couple of weeks ago, I said that I got a review copy of Rock Band Unplugged for the PSP. And in this review copy of Rock Band Unplugged, they had a thing saying, this UMD has one specific serial number on it. And that serial number is tied to your name and your media outlet. And so if we find it on BitTorrent, it's got your serial number on it, you're going to, you know, you're getting cut off. So it is possible for them to create like a specific, like put a serial number on the disc. I'm sure it is possible. Now, is it cost effective? I don't know, because I don't work in the DVD duplication industry. So it may not even be a code. It may that there is a serial number on the disc, and there's also a serial number on the barcode that the person at the register scans, and that activates it. So your DVD player, when it goes online, or Blu-ray, when it goes online, there it is. But then you've got the question of not everybody has their Blu-ray player online. So it's a very sticky situation for DVDs and Blu-rays. I think it would work. It's more of a better idea for games, especially if it's an online game, than it would be for DVD and Blu-ray, because there's a lot of, you know, my DVD player doesn't connect to the internet. So what would it do? Tiger Claw says, this is sounding like DivX. And no, we're not talking about the video codec. This is the Circuit City thing that you could rent DVDs and you could watch it, and then the DVD like erased itself or something. It was magic mumbo jumbo like that. Hey Jude says, doesn't most software like Photoshop already have this tech with online activation? Basically, this is just a waste of money. The best way to combat piracy is you're missing the point. Is making it easier for the consumer to get the product. iTunes is great. So blah, blah, blah. This is not to combat piracy. This is to combat the guy going into the store and picking up the physical copy and putting it in his baggy pants and walking out and them not responding to the alarm. That's what they want. This is the Entertainment Merchants Association, not the Entertainment Software Association. The merchants are not worried about BitTorrent. They're worried about the guy stealing the physical product off the shelf and walking out with it and using it. That's what this is. So this is just a study. Nobody's going to be doing this. They just said we could get $6 billion in revenue back if we used this benefit denial that we're already using for, you know, points cards and Xbox Live cards and all that stuff. All that stuff has to be scanned at the register before it works. And they do already scan serial numbers of consoles as well. And I don't know if you've noticed that when you buy a console from a retail store, they scan the serial number. So, you know, they know who it is. Or they know that one has been bought. But that's not used for any kind of activation. That's more for records. You can actually see it on your receipt and stuff. So, you know, I guess theoretically when you return it, they're supposed to check the serial number to make sure it's the same one. Most don't, but I think that's what it's supposed to be for. Gameru says he still doesn't get how it would work without being reliant on download services, and this would require the internet. It would. And that's one of the downfalls of it. That's why I don't see it working for DVD and Blu-ray, because not every DVD player, or actually the majority of DVD players, aren't online. So one more story that I want to talk about, and then we're going to go into play some music and then take some calls. I asked this question at the top of the show, and what up? She said, Warner Brothers And that's not where I was going with it, although he is technically correct. But how about this? So Mortal Kombat, Midway, obviously going out of business. Warner Brothers is getting their access. A $33 million sale of Midway assets to Warner Brothers, which includes Mortal Kombat. Well, one guy does not want this to happen because he does not feel that Midway has the rights to Mortal Kombat. I'm just letting that sink in. He does not feel that Midway owns the rights to Mortal Kombat. The people that created Mortal Kombat, made all those video games, abused Mortal Kombat, made them fight DC Universe characters, they don't own the rights to Mortal Kombat. You want to know who owns the rights, who believes that he owns the rights to Mortal Kombat? Lawrence Kasdan. Who is Lawrence Kasdan? He directed the Mortal Kombat movie. That's right. Game Politics reports that the man who brought Mortal Kombat to the big screen has sued Midway in U.S. bankruptcy court over what he claims are his intellectual property interests in the franchise. The suit may interfere with the proposed $33 million sale of Midway assets to Warner Brothers. In a complaint filed this week, Lawrence Kasdan, through his company Threshold Entertainment, asked the court to preserve his IP rights, including copyrights, to certain Mortal Kombat series characters. Kasdan also wants to retain the right to create derivative film and television projects based on the popular fighting game franchise. Kasdan claims that it was him, who made Mortal Kombat more than just a video game. He says in 1993, Kasdan visited Midway with the idea to launch the Mortal Kombat concept in a totally new direction. Specifically, Kasdan proposed to develop a full featured-length motion picture, a television series, and other productions. Midway was initially skeptical as Kasdan's idea was revolutionary at the time. The Mortal Kombat series, as it stands today, is far more a creation of Threshold and Kasdan than of Midway. This is in his official complaint with the U.S. bankruptcy court. Midway's creative input was almost entirely limited to the video games. On their own, the video games provided only minimal backstory and mythology and only flat stock characters. Kasdan and Threshold were responsible for virtually all of the creative input that went into turning the video game concept into a multimedia enterprise. That was actual text from his complaint. In the lawsuit, Kasdan also claims credit for making Mortal Kombat characters like Liu Kang, Sonya Blade, and Scorpion into recognizable names. Because nobody ever said, "Get over here!" until he was in a movie. Apparently. The suit estimates that the franchise has grossed more than $4 billion over the years. So, and Tiger Claw points out, he only owns the movie rights, not the actual game rights. He is arguing, and he's not asking for the game rights here. He believes he owns the rights to the characters. He does not want Warner Brothers to have the rights to Liu Kang, and specifically what it's saying is Liu Kang, Sonya Blade, and Scorpion. He believes he owns the rights to those characters. He didn't create them. He just made them popular, so he believes he owns them. Gingru says this will be thrown. He will be thrown out of court, probably. But lawyers will be paid before that happens. Hey Jude wants to know, can he sue the director for a sucky movie? I mean, the first movie wasn't that bad. I actually enjoyed the first movie. And for those that really want to know my opinion, I think that Mortal Kombat is actually the sequel to Highlander. Because if you remember Highlander, Christopher Lambert's Connor McLeod of the Clan McLeod, he wins at the end of Highlander. He wins the game. He is the one. And, you know, he has the reward of becoming a lightning god, and he changes his name to Raiden, and Mortal Kombat is actually Highlander 2. That's the way that I see it. Prove me wrong. It's a lot better than the real Highlander 2, and 3, and 4. Dark Tetsuya agrees with me. Very good. Tiger Claw says, whoever they get to do the third Mortal Kombat movie, I hope they get the same stunt team that from the first movie, because the fight choreography was awesome. Like I said, the first movie I liked. I even watched it multiple times. Not in the theater. I only saw it once in the theater. But like when it comes on TV, I'll watch it. Make fun of it. But I have a good time. X-Link does want me to point out the Highlander TV show was not that bad. No, it was not. So yeah, you know, I just, you know, at least Uwe Boll's not going around saying he owns the rights to the postal dude. Maybe he will. Maybe he's getting, you know, Uwe Boll owns Blu-ray now. And Dungeon Siege, because he made them recognizable. That's depressing. So we're going to take a quick music break. We are actually going to play this in the podcast feed, because this really isn't game music, but I got to meet for the first time, and we had him on my show on Friday nights, CC Ivory. Now, who is CC Ivory? He is a local composer here in the Atlanta area, and he composes chiptunes, 8-bit chiptunes, all on a Game Boy. He uses LSDJ, which is not a drug. It's an actual Game Boy program, and some other things to create tracked music, and he actually... has a CD that he actually hand paints and everything. It's called To Love and To Hold. And we're going to be playing a track off of this CD. We actually had him perform live. He did several songs live, including a friggin' Rickroll. He performed live on Friday Night Gaming at our final show in Computer Arena and our final show here on All Games Radio over at fnglive.net. That show is, you know, just a note about that show is continuing in video only form over at fnglive.net, exclusively there, and at ustream.tv. That is also where we're going to be chatting for the show, and we're hopefully going to be at an event under the stars at a major retail location next week, and then we'll be in our new location the following week. So it's going to be very exciting, some of the stuff that we're planning for that show. But this show, even though I know it takes a while for it to get on the podcast feed, this show is not ending. We're still going to be exactly where we are, but we have CC Ivory here recorded. And you can see some of him doing live stuff over at fnglive.net. This is from To Love and To Hold. This is Tell Her. It's made all on a Game Boy. It's an 8-bit chiptune here on the Bobby Blackwell Show on All Games Radio online at allgames.com.
Hi, this is Krispy Kreme from the OL Armory, and you're listening to the Bobby Blackwell Show.
The OL Army, they're after us. I mean, they come after us. They're not after us, after us. They don't want to kill us. So, that was Krispy Kreme. He sent in that bumper a while ago. We're going through them. If you want to leave a bumper and have your name up there, Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, leave, like he did, your name. That would be great. A lot more people need to leave their name. And something about coming back to the Bobby Blackwell Show. It doesn't have to be as deadpan as that, although I do thank him for what he did. And, something like that. Or just send me your voice at blackwolf@allgames.com, and I'll put some music behind it, something that we can play. That was CC Ivory, To Love and To Hold. He does all original music on a Game Boy. It sounds like 8-bit chip tunes. He does some covers. He performs live. He's got a show coming up this Tuesday. We have all the information. If you want to get more of his music, 8bitcollective.com/members/CC Ivory. That is where you can see more about him. He also has a MySpace, which is CC Ivory Music, over at MySpace, and he's got stuff over there, including a Rickroll, so you can get an 8-bit Rickroll from him. So, we're going to open up our phone lines and our Skype line for you to call in. Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, 1-866-880-0156. That is toll-free. In North America, you can give us a call and talk about anything that we've been talking about tonight. We talked about Bethesda in id. We've talked about benefit denial. And we've talked about who really owns Mortal Kombat. And, it's obviously, the last question is, it's a pretty straightforward answer. But it's just kind of interesting that the guy who made the movies thinks that he did more for Mortal Kombat than the guys that made all the games and created the characters. If I was the guy that, designed Liu Kang and then I read that, I'd be offended. Game Guru says that, because he thinks that it's not Threshold Entertainment suing, it's a producer. No, in the Mortal Kombat thing, it is complaint filed yesterday. Lawrence Kasdanoff, through his company, Threshold Entertainment. He owns Threshold Entertainment. So, yes, it is the company. But he is making the complaint, but his company is the one serving the papers. So, yes, it is that company. So, believe it or not, the joys of editing... there's about 13 minutes that I cut out because we actually didn't get any callers. It's one of the first times this happened. And actually, that's a lie. We did get some callers, but they really wanted to talk about internal stuff going on at allgames.com. And I really don't think that really belongs in this show. So I have cut all that out. The live listeners got to hear it. There was really not much talked about. Nothing like breaking. It was more people asking me questions of me saying I have no clue. So I didn't think you wanted to hear 13 minutes of that and just internal all game stuff. So we're going to go ahead and skip forward to the OLR throwover. So that's it. Coming up next here on All Games Radio is Orange Lounge Radio. Three people out in Sacramento, California. I think some of them are going to PAX at least. They talk about games for longer than I do, and they get more calls than I do. And so I'm going to call them to be their first caller for tonight. So, Sacramento, are you guys there?
We are here, Bobby. How are you?
I'm doing good. It took us a while to get some calls.
I know. We just tuned in a little bit. We got into studio a little late tonight, so I only caught, about the last couple 20 minutes of your show, and it sounded like there was just a lack of people tonight. I don't know if people are outside enjoying the heat or what's going on, but not a lot of gaming opinions tonight. Maybe it's just been a slow week for gaming news. That's another thing I noticed. I can't think of a lot of really, really big stories this week.
And see, it's funny. Like, when I think it's a slow week, you're like, no, so much happened. And then when I think a lot happened, you guys are like, it's a really slow week.
It just goes to show the diversity here at All Games Radio with all the different shows.
Exactly. Because who do you think owns the rights to Mortal Kombat characters?
What a convoluted mess between the gentleman who claimed to make them big through the movies and such, which I can certainly see. I would think the ultimate rights would stay with the creators, Boone and Tobias.
Yeah.
But I would think that they were the ones that ultimately made them. Now, granted, when they made them, they were on the payroll for Midway. So
now, my question is,
it's pretty convoluted.
My question is, though, is the guy that made the movie also responsible for the TV show? Because if he is, then he has to take that all back because that TV show sucked.
I think that company was. I think they were involved with the TV
show. Then he has no ground to stand on because, I'm sorry, any service that he did to the franchise he ruined with that TV show.
But the first movie wasn't bad.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't good.
It wasn't great.
No, I enjoyed the first movie.
For a video game movie especially, it wasn't bad. I hate that we have to say things like that. Like, you know, for a video game movie, just like how when we're reviewing things, you know, for a Wii game, it's not bad looking. But, you know, I think the gentleman who, you know, helped with the movies and such should be able to retain the same rights he's had. I don't profess to be any type of legal expert. I'm assuming there are legal reasons for all of this and him wanting to have the rights, you know, feeling that he helped make them what they were, what have you. But, I don't know. In a way, you also kind of can't bite the hand that feeds you. And, you know, I think without Ed Boon and John Tobias, there wouldn't have been the characters in the first place. So, you know, but if they made them while on Midway's payroll, then those, you know, characters rightfully belong to Midway and whoever purchases Midway's assets. I don't think this guy really has a claim but to the character's likeness in television and movies, which was sold some time ago.
Yep. But he's going to try to stop the sale anyway.
Well, you know, I hopefully it fails. But I think that's kind of the real sad thing is here. I think, you know, I don't know, maybe this is a little more controversial. I think no matter what happens with this, I think Mortal Kombat is kind of ultimately doomed because I feel like they're going to try to sell this franchise off to make a quick sale to try and sell off a lot of the debt that the company's in. And I don't have a good feeling for the series. Now, you never know. If this thing ends up in the right hands, maybe the assets will get transferred to a developer that can do some pretty awesome things with it. But the pessimist in me tells me kind of otherwise. I just have this really bad feeling that I think wherever this ends up, apparently a game's already in development, but hopefully it doesn't get rushed or anything like that. I think it's a very similar thing as to what will ultimately happen with Duke Nukem Forever. There will be a Duke Nukem Forever. Someone's going to have to help pay off the bills that, you know, have been accumulating for the past few years, but it's just probably, you know, and I hope I'm wrong, but it's very likely not going to be the game we were all hoping for.
Dude, Mortal Kombat, if it goes to Warner Brothers, they give it to the guys at Fifth Cell for Scribblenauts 2.
You know, maybe if there was another chibi puzzle fighter type game, I could see that, but I don't know. I just don't really see those two houses coming together very well. I think that developer is best left to original concepts. So I think we should just let them do their thing with originality because they're doing pretty good so far.
So any news on if Dark Soccer has done her homework yet on the pinball game?
You know, I haven't been able to really ask. I know I've been playing some pinball games on the iPhone lately. Mm-hmm. There's a big free one that just came out, like a Wild West pinball game. And Pinball Dreams is out on the iPhone as well, which is an old-ass Amiga game, which was kind of cool to have that available on the iPhone. Pretty decent translation. The games all got a little choppier in 3.0 because I guess the firmware somehow slows down the rest of the phone. But I couldn't tell you as far as PlayStation 3 goes. Unfortunately, she's not here right this second. She's just getting back from doing some class and school-related things. She'll be joining us just a few minutes into the show tonight. I'll have to ask her about it later.
All right.
I know they've got real pinball going on, though. They just got a Lord of the Rings table, which is a pretty sweet-looking thing.
I want to come over.
You should. Bobby, it's a fun time here in Sacramento, except it's hot. You know how hot it is right now? 107 degrees.
Oh, see, I was about to say, oh, gee, you know, I mean, it's 98 here, but you got me beat. It's more humid here.
Yes, exactly. At least we don't have the humidity, but I'll tell you, you start to feel every degree in the heat like that, in the more desert kind of heat, or I guess you could say valley heat, where we're at.
So speaking of heat, what hot stuff is going to be going on OLR tonight?
You know, it's going to be a very interesting episode of Orange Lounge Radio. Our personal lives have been so busy this week, and we're going to get into that a little bit tonight. We're kind of winging it tonight with the news and some of the things that have been going on. So I know Loki's got a story up here on Battlefield Heroes. Probably going to be talking a little bit about that. Some other things going on in the news this week. But, of course, it's our seven-year anniversary. So
That's right.
We have to take a nod to our birthday. Of course, once you start to get to be of a certain age, you kind of, you know, your birthdays have less of an impact. It's kind of like, you know, after you turn 21, and it's like, hooray, I can drink legally. It's just kind of like, well, all the other birthdays are just kind of, after that. And that's kind of how we are about our seventh birthday right now, is that we're kind of like, well, I don't know if there's any celebration type of thing left that we can do. But tonight we're just going to have a very relaxed night. Do it the way we used to do it here at OLR with zero preparation whatsoever. But I don't want to make it sound like it's not going to be a good show. It'll be fun.
Yeah, it's kind of like me when I like, you know, yay, I did 50 episodes. And I was like, yeah, I did 100 episodes. And then I completely forgot about my 150th. and my 200th was kind of muted.
So it's Well, you know what? You just got, you know, and who knows? Our 7th year anniversary show tonight could be plagued with technical problems. This has been known to happen at Orange Lounge Radio. But we just keep trucking right along for the love of the game.
So that's coming up next, orangeloungeradio.com. Thanks so much, guys. Happy birthday.
Thank you, as always, Bobby Blackwolf, and hope to see you at PAX in a couple months. I got to get that trip booked. Can't believe it's already here.
Yeah, I'm lucky. Yeah. I've already got everything booked, so I'm there.
Yeah, lucky you.
See you there. Bye.
Must be nice to have money. Bye.
Ow. Ouch. I feel bad now. I feel terrible. They made me feel bad. So that's it. I'm just going to end the show now because they made me feel so terrible about that. That is it. That's all I want to inflict on you guys this week. We will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, here on All Games Radio at allgames.com, so you can catch us live and interact with the show directly. Feel free to leave a voicemail with us on any topic or leave a bumper for use in our show on our Skype line, Bobby Blackwolf Show, or email us, blackwolf@allgames.com. You can join our official forums at allgames.com, take part in the community. But we could not make the live show work without the help of the chatters, so thank you very much. Chrisville1724, DC Nate, GK128, AlphaBox, Burning Paper Sun, Burr, Doomplake, Eswat, Footy Monster, Funny Dale, Mako, Maximilian, Octocamo, Seymour Booty, Stone Raider, THK, Tiger Claw, Toshin, ActF, AGN, Alpha Cananagram, Altamace, Satsuma, Ashfox, Bacon Bits, Billy Ova, Binary 667, Blue22, CCPPC, Cedabria, CoolDude13233, D5T, Dark Tetsuya, DeBlueGuy, Deadman Wade, Decipher, DRP223, Dry Dick Donnie, Dungeon Buster, Firecube, Flaming Bozo, Game Guru, Gold Anthro, Grave, Havoc978, Hey Jude, Hitstun, Interlogic, Jim Sally, JP the Prodigy, Kells, Kazin, Mayor, Melted General, Miles Foxy, Munasha, MXT, Necromoz, New Shiny CD, Nutman, Pit Method, Pixelbot, Punchy, Ranma, Redertainment, Shadow Next Gen, Sharonan 8, SSJ100, Matt, Stickaxe, Subzi, Sully907, Surtur, Swampfather, Tedekin, The Raven, The Time Dilation Dude, TM95, Valerino, VXJSNXV, WhatUpG, Wide Angle, Wilcon, Xenocore, Xlink, Zappy, Zeba, and DR4Ev. So that is it. That is all that that's all that we're gonna do. I feel bad. I feel bad for OLR. I'm sorry. See you guys next week. Friday, FNGLive.net. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed on tonight's broadcast are not necessarily the views and opinions of All Games Productions. This file may be freely distributed provided the original content is unedited and proper attribution is retained. For more information about All Games programming, go to www.allgames.com.
And we made it without mentioning anybody dying. Yes!